Welcome to Bridge the Gap with hosts Josh and Lucas, a podcast dedicated to informing, educating, and influencing the future of housing and services for seniors. Powered by our supporting partners, NHI, RCARE, NRC Health, TSO Life, Erdman, and Sherpa. View more and check out all things Bridge the Gap on our new website, btgvoice.com.
Welcome to the Bridge the Gap podcast with Josh and Lucas and Sarah today, the one and only Sarah. She is our producer on the show. It's a big privilege to have her. But in addition to that, we are at the Senior Living 100 conference with one of the icons in the industry. We want to welcome Larry Cohen. Welcome.
Thank you, Lucas. I'm happy to be here. And Sarah, thank you very much.
It's great to have
Excellent.
You.
There's so much good thought leadership taking place here. Larry, you were on a panel earlier this morning with some other great big names in the business. And there was a lot that we can discuss today. And there's a lot that I want to pick your brain about. But I want to first start with the human being behind a 32-year long track record of giving your entire life and career to senior living. Talk to us about where you come from and what got you into this marketplace.
I have a very non-traditional start. So my background is I'm a tax lawyer, have an LLM in taxation. I'm a CPA. I started my career working for two major law firms in Manhattan and then got involved in a large real estate organization. And just fortuitously, in 1986, the real estate company, which was one of the largest multifamily and hotel company operators and owners, decided that there was this new product called congregate care, and it combined hospitality and multifamily. Well, maybe 30 years too soon, but a great concept. We built four buildings, two in California, two in Arizona. And that was really the start of the true congregate care, what then became independent living of a, say, maybe active lifestyle of housing. I joined Payne Weber in 1989 and ended up running their real estate company. And we formed two private REITs to finance a real estate company that were had a subsidiary dedicated to seniors housing. And there, too, the person that led the organization was actually a partner of Bill Coulson's back in the 1970s.
Yeah.
As you know, from Holiday Retirement, and really the pioneer of this industry, and started to develop congregate care properties. And the real estate market was going through a very difficult time at that time with Resolution Trust, with the SNL scenario, and ended up acquiring some congregate care properties that were built in the late 1980s. And as the real estate industry collapsed, this company went bankrupt. So I had to, at Payne Weber, we had to find another operator to come in and take over those assets. So we did a search. I was very active in various industry organizations. I was on the executive committee of the National Multi-Housing Council. I was on the executive board of NAREIT. And at National Multi-Housing Council, David Schless, who you know now is the president of ASHA, was a very young, joined the organization, I think, 1992, where we formed the American Senior Housing Association. And we did a search and narrowed it down and actually hired Capital Senior Living to come in and take over the operations of 13 properties that were originally developed, owned, and then managed by this company that went into bankruptcy. And Capital just did a fabulous job of taking these assets, creating tremendous value. And in 1996, when the founders of Capital were thinking about going public, they approached me and asked if I would join. So I left Payne Weber, joined Capital, and then we went public in October of 1997. So it's a very different background, but I have been very fortunate to be in an industry that is so rewarding in every respect. And your comment about people is all about people. And what's incredible about, you know, 22 years of Capital Senior Living is the group that attracted me to the talent that was at Capital Senior back in the early 1990s. We worked together for decades. And for 88 quarters, I would have a town hall meeting at Capitol in the corporate office and recognize years of service. And every quarter, we're recognizing 10, 15, 20, 25 years with Capitol Senior Living.
Wow.
And that tenure is so meaningful because at the end of the day, when we are serving our residents and their families, and the business is much different today than it was back 32 years ago, much more complicated, but it still is the greatest resource for this industry is people, is the human resource. And as much as people can invest in technology, in physical plant, in systems, it's all about the local leadership and the talent at the community level. It's a very local business that makes such a difference in the lives of the millions of seniors living in senior living communities throughout the country.
You know, on the panel, one of the things, Sarah, that came up that we heard was talking about the penetration rate in seniors housing, and where is the biggest opportunity, and what is the competition? I think this is a discussion that gets batted around. Is it each other? Is it the home? Is it the adult family? And one of the things that came up is you said that the penetration rate has historically been 5%, and then today is really about 5%. Talk to us about that.
That is the opportunity, and also a very strong message that we're not connecting with the consumer and their families. Penetration rate was 5%. It's interesting. For 22 years, we have monthly meetings, and we used to have a pad that would track every month how many leads were generated, expecting that 5% would move in. Okay? So that was kind of the metric used to understand how we get lead generation and how many leads we would need to translate into move-ins. And that never changed. So what has happened is this question of competition. I don't look at other senior living providers as competitors. I look at this that we all succeed and fail together. Because at the end of the day, it's the reputation we have as an industry. It's the quality of service and the lifestyle that we offer residents that make a difference. It's amazing how many families and residents who move into a community say, I only wish I did this sooner. Mm-hmm. But for 6 months, they resisted the move. Mm-hmm. And we need, as an industry, to be a little disruptive and really understand and ask the questions and listen to what families are saying about the need and get people comfortable about making the move and excited about the move. People look at it as end of life, that they're losing their independence. But they're coming from is usually living alone. There's so many issues that happen in health and wellness, in emotion, because of that loneliness. And they move into community, have friends. They have romance. They have activities. Their wellness. There's fitness. So we just need, I think, to really, as hard as people are working and as the business is progressing into more of a care model, we can't forget about the lifestyle. And we can't forget about the incredible outcomes, but most importantly, the high level of satisfaction. You know, we do a resident satisfaction. When I was at Capitol, we would conduct a resident satisfaction survey every year. And we score 95% every year. You would think a business that has 95% satisfied customers can penetrate more than 5% of the market. So there's a disconnect there.
Somewhere.
But it also creates tremendous opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's pretty clear to me, and hopefully to Lucas and everyone listening, that you have a very service-minded perspective, not only on the leadership side, as you were saying, in these monthly meetings with your teams, but also serving residents and the families of the residents. What would you say in those team meetings, or what would you say to someone coming into the industry about the unique perspective of really serving those families? Because I would say that that's probably a majority of your success is just having this spirit of serving everyone.
It's interesting. When we have these quarterly meetings at the corporate office, which everyone in the corporate office is supporting the on-site staff. And that's been very clear. That's been the philosophy of Capital Senior Living. I used to say, look around this, we're doing the lobby here, and we have the reception right there. Is there a cash register here? There's no revenue being generated at the corporate office. Okay. And what everyone's mission is, and we talk about it, it's a family. It really is amazing. But the mission is to provide the best tools, the best resources, the best support to the on-site staff to provide the best experience, lifestyle, and wellness to our residents and their families. I travel to properties a lot of times by myself to go in unannounced. A lot of times I'll travel with regionals. And I am so incredibly satisfied when I see regionals have in their cell phones the cell phone numbers of the children of our residents. This mm-hmm. is the regionals.
Yes.
And they call the families and they talk about their mom or their dad and their issues and they're solving problems. And it's fabulous. It really is. We did an investor day about 8-10 years ago in New Jersey. And we went to visit a property that we have in northern New Jersey. And as I'm walking out, a resident walks up to our CFO and says, "Who's in charge?" Points to me. She says, "I want to tell you, I moved in 8 years ago. I thought I'd be here for a month. Your staff is fantastic."
Aww.
And over the years, we get some complaints, but the vast majority of the letters, the emails, the communications I receive was just espousing about how fabulous the caregivers, the residents, the staff. I can go for hours talking about stories. And it really is all about the people and the culture that you can cultivate in this industry. And as we're seeing the challenges of labor, attracting good labor, retaining good labor, there's such an opportunity for this industry to be champions of the experience that the staff shares with the family and the residents that makes it so special. You know, it's great to see the two of you, kind of young future leaders of this industry, so passionate about the business.
Yes.
It can be fun.
Yes.
People have to understand it's really about improving lives. It's improving lives, extending lives. And being in an industry where we're all one big family that is connecting 24/7 with our residents because we're living with them. Mm-hmm. And it's a very unusual experience. And American Senior Housing Association is now working on, as you know, they have whereyoulivematters.org as a consumer awareness mm-hmm. program. They're now working on an employee awareness program called whereyouworkmatters.org. And it's a great message because people should go to work to enjoy themselves. And there's so much that is rewarding in this business, both financially, spiritually, emotionally. And there's a lot of talent that doesn't even know we exist. And to the extent that we can really start to attract the next generation of leaders and thought leaders of this industry, it's going to be needed. I mean, you just look at the demographic that's coming, that silver mm-hmm. tsunami, and we don't have the caregivers. We don't have the numbers. But we have something very special in an industry that really does such a good job of making such a difference every day in the lives of our residents and our families.
And you used a term a moment ago that we've used on Bridge the Gap, and that's disruptive, being a disruptor. How would you say that you and your teams are disrupting the industry? What are you doing that's different? What are you doing that's maybe questionable to some, but intriguing to others? So what are those things?
I'm not sure anyone yet has been a disruptor, okay? I'll be honest with you.
Well, we're trying.
Okay. And that's where we get to this penetration stagnation.
Sure.
I think part of the challenge is that a lot of this industry, a lot of the practices, a lot of the physical plant, a lot of the services really haven't changed much in 20 years. Mm-hmm. It's great to see some of the new products, some of the new ideas. I think that we have to really think outside the box and understand that our consumer today is different than the consumer we served 10 and 20 years ago. You know, this industry thrived serving the greatest generation, World War II veterans, seniors that grew up in the Depression era. They worked for companies that had pensions. A lot of people don't even know what pension is today. So they had fixed income that was able to pay their rent. We now move to a silent generation, and eventually we'll have the baby boomers coming in. And as a result, we're seeing some challenges on affordability. But also, I think that people they want more choices. They want to be able to be in more control of their lives. So I think what we need to really think about is peeling back the whole service package and the programming that we provide to understand how we better meet individual needs. It's challenging. The operators will give you a lot of pushback because they're concerned about staffing ratios, margins. How do we do this? But I do think it creates a tremendous opportunity when we can refocus, A, on lifestyle with care, very important, but still the lifestyle being the prominent feature, and giving people choices and being able to price the product, price the services, price our apartments in a way that meet needs to widen the funnel of seniors that can actually afford the services.
Sure. Well, we sat down with one of your good friends, Bob Kramer, recently, an excellent podcast. And one of the things he talked about was high tech and high touch. What do you think, what role does data play in everything that you just said?
Data plays a very important role, but high touch plays an even more important role. We need, as an industry, it's a very fragmented business. And as a result, a lot of the providers don't have the financial resources to invest in technology, to invest in systems, to collect the data. We're starting to collect data. Question is, what are we doing with the data? And I think, again, as we think about disruption, is how we can better use predictive analytics and use this data to enhance the wellness, to anticipate falls or other issues affecting our residents, and use the data in a way to really better serve our residents, keep them well, healthy, longer, but also have data that allows this industry to play a more important role in the post-acute continuum. Mm. This is an industry that still is very affordable compared to other settings. The average cost of a hospital stay is $1,500 a day. Skilled nursing is $500 a day. Assisted living is less than $150 a day. And independent living could be $80 a day. So there's real value. And we're seeing good outcomes. And the data does show that we are reducing falls, that we're extending length of stays, things are happening where we're improving wellness, and the socialization is something that's probably not as measurable, but clearly very, very important. But part of the reason that this industry has not had a seat at the table with the other participants is we don't have the data. And Bob has been a champion for years on this yes. exact issue. It's funny, when we formed ASHA in 1992, there were eight of us at a National Multi-Housing Council meeting, and we said the same things. If you look at transparency for real estate asset classes, going back for decades, people know every hotel rate, they know office, they know retail, they know multifamily, not seniors housing. So part of the initiative when we formed OSHA was to provide data and information that would allow the capital markets, the financial markets, consumers to understand the product. And 25 years later, we still are not
getting they understand that, the product.
That information across. We're not doing a very good job on that. So clearly, we definitely have much better data as it relates to care, you know, about NIC providing better data. But even there, unless we get real financial information, a lot of the information coming out is not as accurate as it could be. So it's hard to gauge what is there. So one of the opportunities clearly is to improve the data. But more importantly is what we do with that data to be able to provide better settings, safer settings for our residents and have better data to drive down costs of labor, better data to understand how we can better price our products, how it can become more affordable, and how we can provide a product that matches both the desires and needs of the consumer and provide the financial returns to attract capital in a smart fashion.
Yeah.
So exciting. And you have obviously played a lot of roles on boards and leadership councils, and that portion of your resume is probably very, very long, and we don't have time to go over all of it. But will you give us a snapshot of how you've been able to influence this industry on these boards and with Asha and different colleagues and other industry professionals that you've been able to work with?
Well, it's been a real treat. I've gotten to know and be very good friends with some very talented people in this industry that we've served together. This is a mission-oriented business, and as such, it's incredible to see the collaboration that occurs within this industry to help one another. And because we all want one another to succeed. At the end of the day, selfishly, it's that success that will improve the reputation of this industry, will actually enhance penetration rates. And it also minimizes the risk of negative news that could impact our businesses. But the this industry has attracted fabulous people, very smart, very talented, very committed to what they do. And it has given us as an industry the chance to really be very thoughtful of understanding what's happening at the local level and what we need to do to adjust to those changes at a very fast pace to be able to be able to be more futuristic, if you will, about what is needed to see this industry not only thrive, but really, well, actually it is to thrive, not to succeed, but really to thrive and get to a higher level. Because there's, as I said, 90% plus of the potential residents aren't living in our communities.
Right. Well, I'm so glad that Sarah asked that question because as a leader in the space, CEO of a publicly traded company, when I look at you and your career, I see most at the forefront your volunteer leadership on these boards of NIC, Asha, and coming to all these events to promote thought leadership, and you're giving of your time to do that. So it's a perfect transition into a couple of our final questions as we round out the show. Looking forward, so we're not going to put you in the hot seat to ask what your next move is, but it is an opportunity that we talked about on the phone earlier, is that you've had a few months to travel with your grandkids, to kind of step back and look at a long, successful career. Talk to us about some of the things that have hit your mind's whiteboard when you've had a chance to sit back.
I've been reading a lot,
okay,
which is great, and listening a lot, and meeting a lot, and I do have a whiteboard, and it's been very exciting to kind of reflect over 32 years of things that worked well, things that didn't work well. And really understanding, you know, hopefully to, you know, as I think about my next chapter, find people that I really enjoy working with and respect, of creating something very special that has a long tenure, way beyond the tenure I've already had for this industry. I think the biggest change, I think, going forward is we have to think beyond a three-year cycle. You know, in business, you have a business plan, you have a strategic plan, and it's very hard to anticipate what's going to be out 3 to 5 years. But we need to, and maybe 5 to 10 years. And we have to be able to adapt our products, our services, our care plans, not only to what will meet the needs today, but also communicate with the children of our residents. And the industry is starting to do that, but to really understand what is coming and not be reactive, but be proactive in providing a package that is not only attractive, because don't forget the decision makers today very often are the adult children. Mm-hmm. So what resonates with the adult child, not just the prospect, that can get them excited about the future? And that clearly will help the decision-making process as it affects their parent today.
Mm-hmm. So as you've had a chance to sit back, I think that there, even though you may be quote unquote retired, you're far from gone. So that term to me, I don't think that's a good definition of what your status is today, even though it might be the right answer for your transition out of capital. But there are a number of CEOs and leaders in the business that candidly are moving on to a next chapter in their career of a 20, 30, and 40 year long career. What do you think, what would be your admonition to the next phase of future leaders, the 20, 30 years from now, the guy or girl that's going to be the CEO of Capital Senior Living or something else? What do you think that they're going to have to do differently than maybe what you guys did in the 90s?
Well, those of us who formed this industry in the 90s really came from the real estate industry.
Sure.
And the business back then was much more of a social model, mm-hmm. and really focused on lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Although today you see the active lifestyle coming back again.
Yes.
I think that 20, 30 years from now, thinking about the future leaders, they're going to have to understand how to weave that wellness, that care, with the lifestyle. And I think what's happened to this industry, maybe we move too quickly to worry about care.
Okay.
And maybe we kind of forgot a little bit about lifestyle, worrying about the care. And as a result, it's not attractive to the prospects. So I think that it's going to be a multidisciplined approach. I think it will always be about the touch and the people. And that's the most important in culture. I think that if there's anything that I would suggest to any new entrants into the industry or to future leaders for this industry, is what do you need to do to create a culture with people that is so apparent to the on-site staff and to families and to residents that you become top of mind of where people want to live. And that is combining the fun of the industry, the lifestyle that is there, the socialization, with the best care. Mm-hmm. And again, there's such an opportunity when you think about the price point to provide a really fabulous value proposition of quality living, quality lifestyle, and wellness at an affordable price.
Yeah. And it is fun to create that culture, to bring in people like Sarah, who doesn't come from the senior living industry, right?
Yeah.
That's what's been attractive to bringing you in.
It is. And, you know, it's so interesting when you were talking about just having joy and having fun in this industry and in your job. It's so true for me. I did not have a background in senior housing, and now it's what I've fallen in love with. And it's because of people like Josh and Lucas and like you, Larry, that have opened my eyes to so many opportunities that really are fun and enjoyable.
Well, don't ever change, okay? Because it is that passion and love for what you do that will help you succeed. There are always going to be challenges.
Sure.
And you're going to have bad days. But it's always great to wake up in the morning excited to go to work. And I've always said that what really probably I enjoyed most about my career is I've always felt I've learned something new every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exciting too, because that just makes you better every day at what you do.
And
the other thing is surround yourself with great people.
Yes.
Always surround yourself with great people that you can trust, that have the same vision, have integrity, same type of culture, if you will, and that will also create a fabulous organization.
Well, you just teed up my final questions, and I'm going to bundle them. Talking about those good people, is there someone or a couple of people that you look back on 30 plus years in the business? Is there a person or two that you could name and say, that person really invested in me to help me get to where I am? And then my final question, as I bundle this, is that if you could look back on at the beginning of your career, what would you go back and tell yourself today?
I think the person that had the most influence in my career was Keith Johannesson. Keith was president and chief operating officer of Capital Senior Living for about 25, 26 years until unfortunately he passed away in 2016. I met Keith when I was looking to hire an operator for the portfolio that we had at Payne Webber at the time. And I just learned so many lessons from Keith about how to really, it's a combination of tough love, you know, to really be a good operator and gain respect and really understand the nuts and bolts of the business. And it's a very much nuts and bolts business. It's where, you know, saving nickels make a difference. Okay. But also had the heart in this industry to really, really thrive. And he was a great partner and a great leader and someone that also, you know, I think I was fortunate to learn a lot from over the years. Going back to kind of what I would tell myself back at the beginning, it goes quickly. So you really have to think far out when you think about plans, because everything that is working well only does so for a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to anticipate change. And you have to even go beyond the near-term change, but even further out, being much more futuristic. And it's really important to listen. I think so often, and quite frankly, even some of the sales leaders in this industry would say, you know, to really understand and solve issues, you have to be a very good listener. As opposed to just someone that likes to talk all the time. So it's good to sit back and listen to what people have to say as well.
What a value,
great
Sarah.
Advice.
Isn't this so wonderful? This is the fun that we're talking about.
It is. And I can't wait to share this episode because you're so open, you're so insightful, and it's so real and so raw. It's such advice that we can take, and literally anyone in any position in the industry and outside of the industry needs to hear this advice.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Sarah, tell our listeners about our website and how to connect.
Absolutely. So all of this episode and all of our others will be at btgvoice.com. You can hear from Larry and many other guests there, and also on social media. We're LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. and YouTube. The list goes on and on. Bridge the Gap Senior Living Podcast.
That's right. There's no excuses. And Larry, you'll be fascinated to know this, is that our audience, they love listening to these shows and they give us a lot of feedback. And we really encourage that. We're always trying to figure out ways to connect to our audience on a deeper level because we want to give them what they want to hear. And so we encourage our listeners when they're out walking their dog, they're on a plane, they're traveling, listening to the podcast or watching the videos on YouTube or Facebook, that you guys can go to btgvoice.com, write us a message, write us a note, and tell us how this interview went with Larry. Give us your thoughts, and we'll make sure that we forward, hopefully, those love letters onto Larry that he's gotten for so many years. And, you know, it's just been a lot of fun. And thank you, one and all, for listening to another great episode of Bridge the Gap.
The podcast team wants to hear from you. If you're on Instagram, let us know your takeaways. Take a screenshot of the show you just listened to, tag BTG Voice, and we might just share your thoughts. Thanks for listening to Bridge the Gap.